Hello and welcome to The Exit, presented by Flippa. This is a 30-minute podcast featuring amazing entrepreneurs who have been there and they have done it. The Exit talks to operators who have bought and sold businesses of all different shapes and sizes. You'll learn how they did it, why they did it, and get exposure to the world of exits, a world occupied by a small few, but accessible to many. And on this episode, I sit down with Corbett Barr. He's a fantastic entrepreneur who really figured out early on from a failure at an exit that a lifestyle business doesn't have to mean your entire life being wrapped around a business. It means that the business can operate around your life. Like, you can function, have a great life, and be a digital nomad in a way to create a cool lifestyle for yourself and operate a business on your own time. And he created a business called Fizzle, and he does a great job of walking us through his journey, actually starting and raising millions of dollars and failing at an exit, and what he learned through that process, all the way to starting Fizzle and operating a successful, profitable business, eventually exiting one on the Flippa marketplace that was a Spanish teaching application. And he does a great job, great storyteller. So without further ado, let's dive right into my interview here with Corbett Barr. All right. I am here with Corbett Barr, the co-founder and CEO of Fizzle. How's it going today, Corbett?
Hey, great. Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. So before we dig into, you know, your exit and some of the details around Fizzle and things like that, let's hear a little bit about your background and what brought you into starting business in the first place.
Yeah, I didn't have a good idea of what I wanted to do with my career. And I just kind of like followed one opportunity to the next. I was definitely interested in technology, and I ended up in Fortune 500 consulting. It was nothing that I had ever thought of as a kid. It's not like your parents ask you what you want to be when you grow up and you say, I want to be a consultant. but that's where I found myself. And I learned a lot of really interesting things from that. But a couple of things. First is I started feeling like it wasn't all that fulfilling just to help some massive multinational company become a little bit more efficient. I wanted to be like closer to the actual like workings of a business. And I also, for some reason, always had this nagging feeling in the back of my mind that said I would never really be satisfied in life unless I saw if I had what it took to be an entrepreneur. And I don't know where that came from. I grew up very blue collar. My parents worked really hard and never really had a lot to show for it. So I think I just looked at business and entrepreneurship as a way out of that hamster wheel.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, I think that a lot of people feel that similar kind of push in the early days where you're not really sure of what to do. And then sometimes you meet someone that is maybe of a similar age where they've started a company and you can kind of follow what their lead is. But I'm always interested in how people get started. And I love that you kind of modeled after, you know, seeing what your parents did, and you really felt that bug. You got the hook of starting a business for sure. So what led you to eventually start Fizzle?
Yeah, well, my exit story is pre-Fizzle, actually. And the failure of that exit actually is kind of what led me to start Fizzle. But the previous business, you know, I kind of had this idea that I wanted to try entrepreneurship, but I was never sure exactly when the right time was. And of course, the idea of building a business and, you know, not being paid for a period of time was scary. Living off of your own savings. So I wasn't really sure exactly when I was going to, but my wife and I moved to the Bay Area because she was going to graduate school. And as part of that process, I was just reconnecting with old colleagues, people I hadn't seen in a long time. And I went to coffee with someone who I'd worked with about 5 years in the past. And it turned out that he was right in the middle of planning to start a business, and he was looking for co-founders. So, you know, ding, 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 this seemed like a great opportunity because he had an idea. He also had previously built and run a successful business and sold it successfully. And he was a really smart guy that I looked up to. So we started having conversations over the period of several months, and I got more and more comfortable with the idea of embarking on entrepreneurship. At the time, this was when you didn't really build an internet business on your own necessarily. This was really when you went out and looked for venture capital. And we were in San Francisco, so it was a perfect place to do so. So he and I decided to start the company. We were the two co-founders, and we spent the first year building the business and shopping around our idea and our progress to 30 or 40 different venture capitalists until we finally raised money towards the end of that year. And that period of building the business while watching my savings dwindle and trying to get this thing off the ground was harrowing. I remember being as stressed out as I had ever been in my life and starting to kind of second guess myself a little bit about entrepreneurship just because it was so difficult to go through.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that kind of describes a lot of people in the Bay Area. Like I lived in San Francisco for 5 years and started a company. We did the whole, you know, six people living in a 2-bedroom house, raising money and things like that, getting out of that house and just kind of that gauntlet that is the Bay Area when you initially go out there. I think that a lot of people really don't get a chance to experience the kind of think tank energy that happens there. So it's great that you found your co-founder, you raised some money. And what happened with the exit? You guys grew the business. He had a successful exit previously. What happened with the exit itself? Hey guys, Steve here, and taking a quick pause from the interview. I know that selling a business can feel unattainable and just out of reach for everybody, but it's definitely something that is very reachable for people that are listening to this podcast with Flippa. And I've mentioned that this show is presented by Flippa. They have over 3 million users on their platform who are looking to acquire everything from content sites to e-commerce stores to SaaS platforms or even mobile applications. So if you're curious and want to know more about what your business is worth, head to flippa.com/theexit for free valuations on your business. It takes a couple minutes to literally go through, and you can just go through the whole process without committing to anything at all. So once again, flippa.com/theexit, check it out, get evaluation on your business without any commitments, and just see exactly what your valuation of your business is worth. So let's dive into the interview.
So a couple of things happened. One is I knew that I wanted to try entrepreneurship, but I didn't have any concept of the way that you build a business. And I don't just mean, you know, how to build a successful business, but I mean the manner in which you go about building a business. And I found myself in this situation where I left a pressure cooker being in corporate consulting and not really feeling like it was my, the way that I wanted to spend my life and my career into something that was even more stressful because now I had a co-founder, investors, advisors, a board of directors, an office, employees, and just all of these competing needs. And then on top of that, having to build an actual product and find customers and so on. So I was stressed out. My co-founder and I were at odds with each other in a lot of situations, not really able to agree on the future of the business. And partly that was because we were watching the runway for the business. You know, we raised a couple of million dollars, which was great, but it's easy to watch that dwindle over time and start to get worried about what your next step is going to be. So this was towards the end of the last financial collapse. If you remember, the banking world collapsed and venture capitalists really had to tighten their belts because they weren't sure if they were going to be able to go back to their partners and raise more money and so on. So here we were caught in this situation where my co-founder and I were arguing and we had gone about the building the business in sort of the typical Silicon Valley way of the time, which is still true for a lot of businesses today, which is let's build something really big, get a whole bunch of customers on the platform, and then we'll figure out how to monetize it later. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, you really put yourself on the track of you have to be able to raise money at certain checkpoints. Otherwise, things aren't going to go very well because you've got payroll to meet and so on. So right around the time that we were going to be out shopping for another round of capital, the financial world collapsed and it became really hard to get meetings, really hard to convince existing investors to give more money and so on. And it was looking like we were maybe going to be able to convince our existing investors to give us more money, but the terms might not be great. And it probably meant that we were going to have to dramatically change, cut back, and so on. But right at the last minute, a business came along that was interested in really absorbing our technology and using it to power something that they had been working on. And this was kind of this last minute, like shining white knight scenario where, oh my gosh, like we might be able to divert this, like avoid this horrible disaster of raising a down round or a bridge round or something like that. And instead be able to sell our technology. And, you know, there would be terms, like we would probably go along with it, continue to build it and so on, but we would have this bit of an exit. So this was all going on, and it was looking fine, but this discontent between me and my co-founder, it turns out, was much deeper than just the two of us. And a number of our key employees had been feeling the same way. They were unhappy with the dynamic, with the ownership, with the way the company was going. And they decided that if the business was going to be sold, that they wanted a bigger part of it. And they actually approached me saying that they wanted to essentially stage a coup on myself and my co-founder and change the way that the business was managed if they were going to go along with the sale. Wow. So what this meant was all this started happening as the due diligence started happening from the new buyers. And as they dug in deeper and deeper, they interviewed all the employees and they started to find these cracks in the team. And that ultimately ended up killing the deal. And it turned super ugly after that point. Lawyers got involved. People were, you know, fighting over scraps. We ended up raising a bridge round, which meant we couldn't keep the entire team together anyway. We had to lay people off. We had to go into a whole different mode. And I was really soured on the thing and ended up walking away at the end of it. Mm. And, you know, I had equity that converted into, we did end up selling the technology, but to a different company for a much lower amount. And I just ended up walking away and really having not much else to do with that business. And I learned a lot. I mean, it definitely influenced the way that I went about building my next businesses. And, you know, this has now been 12 years ago. So things have changed a lot. I've been an entrepreneur the whole time and I've had success with other entities, but really that experience of disagreeing with my co-founder and not recognizing all of the cracks that were happening within the team and within the key employees was a real eye-opener and has influenced me dramatically to this day, I'd say.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a very difficult and stressful situation to go through when you have like all these people that are flustered and upset. And it's just such a difficult thing to kind of even focus on going forward as a business. It's so kind of counterproductive when you have all these emotions running high. And often when money's on the table, things can just really shift dramatically in a negative way. So getting into a positive light, mm-hmm. had some successes over the last, you know, 10 years or so. What you mentioned another exit as well. So before we get into Fizzle, what happened between that kind of failed exit till Fizzle?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the key takeaways from that experience was, first of all, as a business owner, I always want to be in control of my own fate, and control of your own fate comes from having solid revenue and growth prospects. And building a business based on, you know, hoping to capture market share and then figure out how to monetize it later, that's just too much of a roller coaster for me. Mm-hmm. So putting revenue first was one lesson. I'd say the other lesson is that when things are going well, it's really easy to get along with everyone on your team. When things aren't going well, stuff can happen between personalities and so on that you could never anticipate. And the way that you structure partnerships needs to account for not just getting into the partnership, but also the dissolution of that and what will happen, you know, if things don't go well. And it's really just made me pay attention to the way that I offer equity to partners, the way that I structure things, who I do business with, all that sort of stuff. After that failure, my wife and I took a sabbatical road trip to Mexico for 8 months. We really hit the reset button. I had been burned out and I wanted time to think about what I wanted to do next instead of just jumping into something. Mm-hmm. And on that trip, I started looking into all kinds of ideas, spurred by Tim Ferriss and the 4-Hour Workweek. This was around the time that location independence, digital nomading, other things were coming into play. And we were meeting people down in Mexico who weren't rich, they weren't retired, but they had figured out ways to make their careers work around their lives instead of the other way around. And up until that point, I guess my view of entrepreneurship was that you had to try to swing for the fences so that you could make a bunch of money and then go off and do what you wanted to do with the rest of your life. I didn't realize that there were ways to build businesses so that you could enjoy your life now and then, build your business separately. And you know, you can still have a big successful business, even though it's a quote unquote lifestyle business. It just matters the way that you go about building it. So there was a period where I explored a lot of different ideas. I actually had a sale on Flippa in maybe 2012 or so. I met a friend down here and we were talking about all kinds of different business ideas. We ended up creating a Spanish tutorial service, basically for people trying to learn Spanish. And we partnered with a local teacher here and we would send lessons via email every morning. We called it Morning Spanish. It was a really simple idea. We built it, gained customers, and ultimately it was in the direction that I wanted to go, but it was a nice profitable little business that we could put on Flippa and sell. And it was a really fun experience. And it was kind of the opposite of what I had had before. Nice. Along the way, at the same time, I really discovered audience building tools, blogging, podcasting, that sort of thing. And that took me in a whole different direction. And that's been the trajectory that I've been on ever since.
Nice. I love that the concept of a lifestyle business being around your life, you know, you can build whatever you want. And as long as your life has, a lot of time to spend with family and you have this happy life, businesses don't have to be the kind of full focus of everything. And I think, you know, I struggled with that early on, you know, when I moved out to the Bay Area, it was 24/7, 365, you know, build a business, swing for the billion-dollar fence, you know, everybody's swinging for the billion, the unicorn style businesses. And I think that it's one of those things, especially as you get married, you have kids, you kind of grow a family and things like that, just priorities change in general. And I think that that really kind of shifts a lot of people's mindsets. And I love that you're in the space now of helping creators. So, you know, you've learned all of these valuable lessons throughout your career so far. And now that you're in the creator space, which is Fizzle, what are you trying to accomplish? Like, what is Fizzle really trying to do for creators?
Yeah. So we basically help creators get business ideas off the ground. And we do that from a combination of courses, coaching, and community. So people join, they get access to a training library. We have weekly events for them. And then we have community where people come to talk about what they're working on. And this is the kind of thing that I guess I wish had existed when I was getting started, because I didn't really know what a business was. There were just a lot of foundational things about entrepreneurship that I didn't understand and about marketing. And so within Fizzle, we're able to bring in experts with all kinds of different expertise around audience building, around product development, to teach courses that give people a leg up and help them hopefully avoid making some of the mistakes that I made and that other people made. I have learned that the majority of entrepreneurs have a lot of mistakes in their background, and it's not necessarily something to be afraid of. But I've also learned that you have to think of entrepreneurship as maybe the overall big picture of building businesses over time and having some successes and some failures. And really the goal for me is to still be in the game because it's what I do for a living. I enjoy it. Also just to recognize that I can make a really comfortable living for myself, teaching, creating online courses, running a podcast, all that sort of stuff, without having to exist in that pressure cooker that you talked about, that was my view of what entrepreneurship was. And now I recognize that it can be so much more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So now that you're building out this business, you've learned all of these things. For listeners out there that are, you know, they're building a business, what would you say is like the key thing to have in place if you're ready for getting ready for an exit in the future, whether it's tomorrow or 10 years from now? What would you say from your experience is vital, like key to having that that healthy business that could be acquired in the future?
Well, the thing that I see now, and that I definitely in some cases have been guilty of, is that I think there are a lot of businesses that aren't really cut out for a sale because the business owner is so integral to the business itself. And if you took that person away, there wouldn't be much of a business left. And you see this all the time in the creator space, because a lot of times the creator is the person that's in front of the camera. They're the person doing the streaming. They're the person on the podcast and so on. So I think that the important thing, if you do want to sell a business, is to recognize that difference and to think about it early on. It doesn't mean that you can't still be in front of the camera, but also it does mean that there have to be other people. There has to be other voices, other creators, other people involved, so that you're not the business itself. You're just a part of the business.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. 100%. So the finale question that we ask everybody, just to really get a good view, lay the land across the board, is knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago?
I would tell myself to, build an audience before I build a product. And I would say that's because the greatest risk we face as entrepreneurs is that we're going to spend a bunch of time and money on something only to find out that people don't actually want it or that they're not willing to pay for it. By growing an audience first, by really tapping into a community of people with a particular problem or a need or a desire, you can almost co-build your product with them and be sure that there are going to be people there that are interested in the thing. And along the way, you can show them, hey, this is what we've been building. Do you like this? Is this useful? And so on, so that you'll be more certain that you will reduce the risk that people aren't going to want this thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well said. I love the audience first approach. I know, you know, Casey Neistat and a lot of these big vloggers and YouTubers and things like that are all really very, very fixed on the audience first approach, because it is kind of the future of how you can quickly iterate and test with businesses from the start, see if people are interested. And like you said, growing with community is the future, like having them tell you what features need to be added. And especially in your space, it's such an exciting kind of time for community builders out there, people that are launching courses and things like that. That's a really, really exciting niche to be in, for sure. So where can people go and learn more about Vizzle and what you're working on? And this is kind of a good final piece here, is you did delete your social medias. So if you could add on to that at the end, that'd be great.
Yeah, I had like a pivotal moment 6 months ago or so, where I just recognized that I wasn't getting that great of a return on my investment of time in social media. And I started to question whether or not it was actually important or necessary to build a business. I deleted all of my social media posts, and I ended up deleting the majority of my social media accounts. Today, I have just Twitter. That's the only one that I stuck with. And that's because I enjoy the people that I'm connected to there. And it's a place that I can test out ideas and see how people react. But for me, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all of the rest, I wasn't really getting any value from it. And I think it's easy to assume that we need to be there because so many people say that we need to be there. But if you really look into it and ask, where are my customers coming from and so on, and where is my emotional energy coming from? A lot of times you're probably in more places than you need to be. So that's my story. You can dig into my reasons for doing that and what I've learned from deleting all of my social media posts over at my own personal blog at corbettbar.com. And if you want to check out the Fizzle community, course library, all that kind of stuff, head over to fizzle.co.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, wherever you guys are listening to this, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, or SoundCloud, definitely check the show notes. Everything that Corbett just mentioned will be linked in there. But once again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your Storbit, Corey, or your story.
I'll share my Storbit anytime. thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate being here.